Okay, well, we're ready to rock and roll. Jim West plugging in with me from New York City. Still there in New York, Jim. Continuing on from last week's show, you were a bit sick. Feeling better?
I'm a little better, but I'm not sure if it's really doing anything. You know, I'm a little better, not a whole lot better, but I'm, you know, it's not fun being sick.
I know.
I'll be. I'm. I can hardly wait to get out of here. In another 10 days, I should be out of here.
Yeah, right. Ah, exciting.
I have to buy an airplane ticket.
Ah, sure.
Get the hell out, you know.
Yep. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, we continue to follow that. Anything on your horizon? Anything you're seeing to start the show tonight? Anything that you wanted to bring up? I've got a few things. I did send you a couple of interesting articles from Australia in regards to autism. I had a guest on this morning, Dina Churchill. Nice lady. Very open-minded and awake person. I'm just told her it's going to send some information, your info in regards to ultrasound as well. And so that was a good show, and I was mentioning some just some info coming out of Australia looking at autism, which was interesting, and I sent you one. I think you wrote the guy an email,
right.
That one, which I saved. It was interesting, wasn't it? Give me a look, because I'm sure I saved. Here it was here. It was the Sydney Morning Herald. Does it make sense? More than 600 kindy kids suspended last year. So the more than 600 kindergarten students were suspended from New South Wales. That's where I am, in Sydney primary schools last year, raising concerns small children are being sent home as punishment for undiagnosed disorders such as autism and ADHD. So I was mentioning that and a few other studies, one from Perth in Western Australia, where there's like a skyrocketing amount of young children going into the schools there with autism as well. So a few of those, and the teachers are stressed there because they have to deal with a lot of kids as well, and they're not being trained or whatever. So I guess sometimes they're being sent home. But they're calling it the autism spectrum disorder now. And, of course, the so-called health professionals are saying, well, you're just noticing it now because we're able to diagnose it better. But it's something of a worry. What was your thoughts on that article, Jim, about the kindy kids being sent home? You did send me a little bit of an email there. Hopefully he replies to you.
Well, he did. We actually had a little back and forth there, a friendly back and forth.
Nice.
Yeah. And, I think I, sort of woke him up to a little bit of the ultrasound, a relationship there, you know,
Jordan
Baker.
Yeah. For the, Sydney Morning Herald.
Yeah. Right.
That was a
right.
lady.
Yeah. 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 It worked out, it worked out fairly well. As far as it's usually not easy to contact people who are professional journalists. You know, they don't want their illusions shattered. You know, but you know, I don't know if anything pragmatic or concrete came out of it, but we did have a back and forth that was friendly, and that was that. You know, basically, and you know, but. It makes sense, you know, that kids are just falling apart. You know, we've, in the United States, they have 57% chronic disease, 2% autism, 1% ADHD. It's a disaster, you know, and it's obvious that ultrasound's at the bottom of this, and along with vaccines and all that. But the foundation is ultrasound, you know. I have to throw in a bragging thing. I've been into a pretty in-depth back and forth conversation with a former New York Times environmental journalist and an award-winning journalist, and she told me that I showed her, you know, some of my my work on measles and on the flu virus, some of my articles there, research and all that. And she said it was amazing, fantastic, and should go viral. You know, that's what I got back from her. So I'll probably, I might put that up on my my praise page on my website, you know.
What was that for?
Your book? For the measles studies flu study. Yeah. New York measles epidemics. I did the big studies.
That's so right. We posted that.
She's pretty
well
knocked out. She's knocked out by that. And she's also knocked out by the ultrasound articles. And she had quoted me. Well, it all started by her quoting me in an article and then referenced me. And then I thanked her for it. And then we started talking back and forth. And she started showing me that she'd done a lot of work about the poisoning around New York and how it was affecting children's health, how the earth was being poisoned, you know. And that's exactly what I was doing with the measles epidemic, you know. Mm. And so anyway, a lot of good things happened out of that. But as far as the Kindy kids go, I mean, it just makes sense. We've been talking about that basic phenomena, you know, for like years, you and I, you know. And but we've been talking about it in terms of poisoning, which is ultrasound and vaccines, you know.
That's right.
You know, Jordan's work, you know.
I guess with her, but the heading of her article is, it doesn't make sense. More than 600 kindy kids suspended last year, but I guess with the information on offer from you, it does make sense as to why this is happening. But obviously, as I've told you many times, it's not so much that it's new in this country. I just don't think that people are prepared for this amount of children to have these kinds of problems like ADHD and autism or all this anxiety problems. You see them around and they're just scared of everything and they panic and freak out, and teachers aren't trained to deal with this because they got a lot of other kids to deal with in the schools. And I can see very clearly, especially in high schools, they're going to get pushed out, you know. So this is a problem that isn't going to go away. But I guess, what did you think of the actual article itself? I mean, these things aren't addressing ultrasound or vaccines or anything. They're just telling you that these kids are being thrown out of the school.
It makes sense that these things are going to be happening and that they have to happen, you know. They're going to happen, you know, this just falling apart of society. And like, what are they going to do with these kids that they kick out, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they have to figure out something, you know.
There are some autism schools being going in, but I think, is that you that mentioned that the wave that's coming? I mean, we're seeing it so much now in the United States and here in other countries, but there seems like there's this incoming tide that's going to really shock people with the amount of children that are going to be suffering from these disorders, with the elephant in the room, as we always say. But I think it's going to overwhelm the education departments in this country, and everyone's going to be running around like chickens with their heads cut off, arguing with each other, trying to work out what to do with all these kids and why it's happening, when the elephant in the room isn't being ever addressed. So at least what we're doing here and what you're doing with the reporters and stuff is planting those seeds, I guess. And if we can get one of these mainstream papers like this to just mention you know, ultrasound, for example, we could start something at least. Well, but nothing's being done.
At least when they're spreading their propaganda, they'll have a little bit of guilt in their heart. maybe that's all we'll achieve, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I picked that article up. I thought, wow, you know, these kids being suspended. Do you see this? I have read this in the U.S. that sometimes these autistic children or whatever become aggravated or have violent even tendencies, and the police are called to take them. You know, the parents are having problems dealing with them. We've talked about the many issues related to autism.
They're installing police in the schools in New York, you know, to a certain extent, I think anticipating or witnessing this rise of irrationality among children and potential violence, you know.
Can you explain this a little bit? I don't think we've gone into too much ADHD and this irrational kind of behavior and stuff like that, where they just can't cope with things, particularly ADHD, and how this is related to ultrasound, or is it more environmental, or are you looking at ultrasound, linking that as well with ADHD, because it's a serious serious problem and it's exploding. The doctors seem to love diagnosing the kids with that, you know, and just like handing them out like lollies, the diagnosis, you know, and out they go. That's a serious condition, man.
Right. Well, you know, any poisoning, according to toxicologists, will if you mildly poison any organism, you can create you can raise the metabolism, you can increase its activity, you know, its rate of activity. In a sense, you're giving it ADHD. If you want to get plants to sprout quicker, you can poison them slightly. Farmers poison their farms with antibiotics, et cetera, and insecticides. The major reason, according to toxicologists, is not actually to kill insects and bacteria, but it's to just slightly poison all the animals and the plants in order to raise the metabolism so you'll have more produce and more flesh at the market, you know. And same with humans. There's a guy named Harari, the elite journalist and a researcher, who says that humans are raised by agricultural protocols. So humans are managed by the same agricultural protocols I just described. There is a desire to slightly poison the human race in order to drive it, to raise its metabolism, because if you're raising the economic metabolism at the same time, and you're going to increase the number of transactions per hour, which means your government and banking are all going to make a little more money, because they only make money on the transactions, basically. So that's where they can get their percent and their interests, et cetera, you know. So there is an economic driving impetus to poison the world. This has been going on for a long time. The toxicology textbook is a 3-volume textbook, a big standard called Haze and Laws. It has a whole chapter devoted to this, and that's on my website, the importance of poisoning human beings in order to drive the metabolism, drive the production. It can be irrational production, but it doesn't matter. They just want to drive that, drive production, you know. So you're going to see this trend in the way children behave, you know, because the whole point, the threshold, the limitation of this poisoning is when if you're an elite, you want to poison society to the threshold at which production begins to downturn. You know, if you're before that, if you're poisoning it, production will go up and up and up. The social metabolism will go up and up and up. And they even have a word for this concept. It's called hormesis. It's a Greek word, but it's a scientific word that describes the what they call increasing the vitality of any biological system through the act of mild poisoning. You know, it's an established toxicological procedure in agriculture and in biology, you know. And so they're applying it to human beings. And if you're going to raise the metabolism and you're going to create this sort of ADHD thing, then you're going to have a certain fringe which is going crazy. And that's, you're going to have autism, which is going to be going too far, you know. You're going to have a blatant irrational ADHD. You're going to have violence. That's going too far. But as long as the general mass of the public is just slightly ADHD, then that's good. And that's basically what they are consciously doing at a certain level. You know, people don't know they're doing it necessarily farmers don't know they're doing that necessarily when they poison their crops and their plants and their animals. They may, because the label says insecticide, the labels say antibiotics, but they know when they apply these things, they get better production. They get more production of their crops. They think it's because they're killing bugs. They think it's, you know, and in some cases that may be true. They think it's because of antibiotics or killing bacteria, you know, but, you know, because you have to enlist people to do all these things. It's like you have to enlist doctors to do all their crazy things, you know. So you have to provide the rationalizations for them to do it, you know, but it all,
yeah,
I guess it's a natural result of the money paradigm, you know. Money just causes people to do these things, you know. And so anyway, I think it relates to this Kindy Kids article and
this, you know. That was one that's popped up. They've done a good job of kind of hiding this, but there is an autism epidemic in Australia, and I've said it many times. I just don't think we're ready for this, and it's slow building. You know, it's slow building. I guess it's like that warm bath. People just get used to it. You know.
So, what is the incidence of autism in Australia?
Looked recently, as I said, they do a good job of hiding it. But you know, I've looked at more a lot of just schools because they're just shoving them in there. And I did hear there was something on the mainstream news the other night that it was just on in the background, and I heard it, and there was a doctor talking about autism rates in Australia, that it wasn't good or something, and he was saying it's really just that they're just getting so good at diagnosing it now, so you're hearing it more. They keep that line going.
Okay.
You know, that's what they're saying.
I came up with I found some rates. It looks like it looks like in 2017 they were saying 1 out of 150.
They might be a bit old, yeah.
Prevalence, and then in 2018 they revised it from 1 in 100 to 1 in 70. In the United States, I've heard like 1 in 50 to like 1 out of 34. You know, so it looks like you have like half the autism rate that the United States has.
Well, a smaller population, so you've got to match that up too.
Well, I'm talking about the percent of the population.
Yeah, but how would that work in with, say, your bigger population in the U.S.? Would it make a difference?
Well, I'm not even talking about the number of people or the number of autism. I'm just saying the percent.
Yeah, you know? 'Cause it does. That seems very high for a country like Australia with what, 25 million people or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, I don't, population has nothing to do with it, really.
Mm.
It's how much of the population is getting autism, and it's like 1 out of...
What is it, 1 in 70? Like
1 in 70 is the latest.
So it's gone from a 1 in 100 to 1 in 70.
It's children. Gone from, well, in 2017, right, they were saying 1 out of 150, then they said 1 out of 100, and then... A year ago, they were saying 1 out of 70. So now they're probably catching up to the United States, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, speeding up.
Yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah. You know? How crazy is that? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And they're unloading them all into the public school system.
Well, they're going to be there. You know what? Yeah, that's why they want to normalize all these problems so that they don't have to they want to be able to just put them into the established institutions and have everybody deal with it variability.
Yeah, we talked about that before. It's a horrible subject that people don't want to mention, but a lot of parents are almost, some of them are happy that their kids are autistic, because it's like their child's special, and it's like they kind of celebrate it in a way.
Well, it's now I got it. I figured out I remember the word diversity. It's the normalization of diversity is actually the concealing of disease to a certain extent.
Mm.
Like gender dysphoria, confusing gender is a toxicological phenomena of poisoning. You know, we talked about that a long time ago. That like EMF radiation poisoning, one of the side effects is factually known to be gender dysphoria, which means gender confusion. You know, so I don't want to be politically incorrect. I don't see anything wrong with somebody. If they feel that way and that's the way they are, well, that's their own business. I'm just saying to ignore the toxicological relationship, I don't think is right either, you know. So I think the big trend to normalize diversity is a big trend to cover up the rising toxicity in our society, from everything from 5G to 64 vaccines, et cetera, you know.
Mm.
They're pushing the boundaries of this hormesis concept that I was telling you. And if they're going to push that boundary, then they have to normalize the side effects of hormesis, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So that's what they have to do. They have to hide it. And they have to, they're turning the heat up, but they don't want anybody to.
That's right.
To notice the relationship between the heat and the disease, you know. They want everybody to think disease is normal.
They just keep turning the dial up.
They want to see how far they can go with it, you know.
Yeah, and probably, society gets used to it, and we kind of, we deny that's happening for them. So it almost becomes like a cinch for them to do that, you know.
Well, they're experts, you know.
Yeah, and we go along with it, so it kind of it works both ways in that regard. Amazing, yeah. And we're not seeing what's going on. We're not looking through. We're not critically thinking.
We're just like sheep. I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, we've got the foggy, glassy, jelly eyes too.
I mean.
God, it's incredible, and I know. And most people just, rely on just coffee to get them through the day and just get through that day each day. They're not going to be too worried about all the stuff that we're talking about here. So it's an incredible, incredible system, indeed. Another thing, just off topic here, Jim, that I just came up today that I was looking at, was from Children's Health Defense. Sorry about the noise in the background. It was a Children's Health Defense article. I was just going to quickly ask you that. We've got a few minutes, but it was a generation asleep, narcolepsy in teens and young adults. And it was from the US, narcolepsy, a sleep disorder. Typically emerges in adolescence, appears to be on a huge rise in the US. A new analysis of US healthcare claims reports prevalence roughly 50% higher. So 1.6 per 2,000, that the upper limit cited in most prior studies, 1 per 2,000, with the highest incidence in late adolescence and early 20s. Pharmaceutical company adds that encourage readers to wonder why they are tired all the time and to take narcolepsy symptom screener test are an indication of the growing problem and the growing market. This is a funny one, because I heard this a lot of times. People are connecting that as well, narcolepsy, after teenagers get vaccinated, especially with Gardasil vaccines. So the young girls just can't even get up anymore, and some of them are getting these weird narcoleptic sort of symptoms where they're going to sleep all the time. Is that something you've looked into? Because they're talking about anxiety, of course, and depression as well. And so it's like a plague on today's youth. It says, so narcolepsy researchers suspect that environmental exposures in generally, here in individuals are the key triggers. some sort of attack on the immune system, I would guess. Is this something you've looked into, narcolepsy?
Well, I let's see. I suspect that it might be related to the bombardment of 24 hours a day of EMF from cell phones.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, that kind of connects, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it's going to just tire you out. I mean, your body's an electronic device. Every cell is an electronic device. And now it has to compete with the 24-hour-day random garbage industrial EMF. Has to compete with that. Your own radiation. Every cell is radiating and interconnecting and communicating electronically. And, you know... you know, it's got to tire you out. You know, it's well known that EMF causes fatigue. That's pretty much indisputable, you know. So narcolepsy is just a step away from that, you know.
It's saying here in 2010, an unusually high number of young people began presenting with narcolepsy after receiving an H1N1 influenza vaccine manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline. So that was Pandemrix that received fast track approval. So they're talking about that there as well, that they were getting these symptoms after they received that flu shot.
Makes sense to me. I mean, it's one more thing. Your body
more
now has
toxicity,
another
toxicity attacks on the immune system. Yeah,
yeah, it's another burden that your body has to carry. It. You know, but you just want to go to sleep and want to wake up when it's over with, you know, but yeah. it never goes away. It's constantly there, you know?
Yeah. That they're mentioning here, Gardasil 9 as well. Narcolepsy, reports, quite a good article worth really reading. A whole bunch of them there. Too much to go through. But sleep disorders, there you go. There seems to be a direct relation to some of these kids who have received H1N1 shots there. So a lot of poisons in that. As you said, yeah, stress the immune system even more. Just break them down in that regard. So that was really interesting, because I have read that over the years, narcolepsy. I just found it really interesting. Not something I've ever had. I've never known anyone with that. But apparently a lot of young teenagers have that now. And a lot of them just seem exhausted. And I think, oh, when I was a teenager, I could jump over the top of buildings, you know? And I see them now. They're just... So a lot of them are so sluggish, has to be, I thought that as well, if they're always continually on their phones and saturated with Wi-Fi, even when they put the phones and Wi-Fi on next to their beds at night, you know, when they sleep to wake them up or whatever in the morning, you're constantly bombarded with this technology around you. It's like a spider web. It would make sense, that kind of conditions as well. But being jabbed pharmaceutical poisons doesn't help.
Well, that sounds like a good direction, you know. I know that power line and, you know, electric motors and fans and transformers and all that, when I'm around those, I have a hard time getting to sleep because I have a nervousness. I just my legs are nervous, you know, and I'll end up biting my tongue and get jittery. But that's the opposite of narcolepsy. But narcolepsy in the daytime when you're not trying to go to sleep, it's got to be the result of some poisoning, you know.
Especially in such young people and young girls, you know.
Right. But they should be full of energy.
You do see in a lot of films. There was quite a good film that came out about it. And other great. I have watched YouTube videos, and there was some European documentaries made on it. Of course, they don't mention ultrasound, but there's this epidemic of young teenage girls who are receiving the Gardasil vaccine and just destroying their lives. A lot of them, they can't move or get out of bed. They're in agonizing pain. So many different conditions. I mean, it's very direct, to the point where a lot of people are taking notice, and there's films being made on it. it's not so much in line with the whole anti-vaccination confusion going on, but it seems like another thing in itself, the Gardasil, to where the governments are even admitting that this isn't really working and they've come out with a new one. You see maybe a triggering effect there maybe ultrasound causation or damage that's already been there. Is that something that might be happening there? There's a lot on MMR, but Gardasil seems extremely dangerous to young women. They just seem to get it, and their parents all say they're happy, they're attending school, they play sports, they're running around, and then you've just got this vegetable there after receiving that shot, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, diseases, to me, are just a recognition of the body's fighting against ongoing poisoning, you know, blisters, temperature, you know, narcolepsy, or what, you know, these are just ways to hibernate. You know, if you're going to sleep, you just want to hibernate until something's over with, you know. I'm sure it's just the sum total of all the crazy poisons that are ongoing. You know, now we have a fracking, this could be something that's part of it, fracking fuel is more toxic than fracking natural gas is more toxic than the prior traditional natural gas, because they use poisons in order to poisonous solvents to get that fracking fuel out of the earth, right? So they figure if they're going to burn it for fuel, they don't really have to clean it that well. So they're going to be burning the toxic chemicals as well as the natural gas, you know. So a lot of power plants are now going online with fracking gas, and it's even coming into our stoves. And there's always another angle of poisoning, you know, coming at us, you know.
Well, there could be. We've talked about that in your own house, you know. That's an incremental thing, isn't it? A slow dose kind of incremental thing. If you're at home, you could be very well poisoning yourself every day from your cooking and heating and gas and all of this. And it might be just poisoning you enough to keep you unwell or feeling unwell or just feeling kind of nauseous or sick all the time. And you just might think you're just working and too tired or whatever. But that's something that's going to bring your health down to a low level, and then you might go and get yourself a flu shot or something like that, and then bang, you know, causes a reaction, some kind, you know,
a
chain reaction. But I think, you know, it does start at home as well. Well, we've talked a lot about that, where people could be actually physically making themselves sick every day and night that they're home, but not make the connection and going about their business, and then something could set something off, and then you're suddenly in the hospital and you're ill and you never know why it happened, you know. And you could blame a vaccine or could blame anything, which is compounding and adding more. But you know, a lot of people are being made sick just in the places and the cities and where they live, and they don't not connecting the dots there, and the water that they're drinking out of the taps, and what they're breathing in every day when they walk on the streets. They're not connecting to making them feel unwell, like is what's happened to you. And
it's all the more reason to try to reduce poisoning in every possible
avenue. Yeah, you know? And identify because, and try and eliminate.
Right, because you know, if you may be okay with the ongoing poisoning, but all these poisons are varying from high to low, and if their highs line up and coincide some day or some hour, then you're going to get a huge dose, you know, and it could knock you out or give you a heart attack or make you go to sleep. You know, it could cause irrational anger, you know. In a way, irrational anger is like a disease where you can't maintain your composure. It's not all psychological, you know, the whole, you know, it's because you're undermined by the ongoing poisoning.
If
there's none of that, you're not going to find anything conversation like that in the psychiatric and psychological literature. You know, they always want to talk about behavior as if it's unrelated to poisoning, but there's, you know, poisoning, your body is all about regulating behavior in one way or another. And if it's poisoned, it can't do a good job of that, you know? So,
yeah, it's,
and then we're right back to the kindy kids, because they're acting irrationally. You know, they're not able to control their behavior, and that's pretty obviously when you talk about children. You know, the result of tons of vaccines, and all kinds of poisons, and ultrasound, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I was talking to John Rappaport about that, and he was talking about how the pharmaceutical psych drugs, you know, they mimic mental illnesses. You know. And how some kids are taken in there, and then they'll put them in. And there's some of the, in America, you know, because we don't have the drug ads like you guys do on TV. It's not allowed here. The biggest drug ad you'll see on TV is for, you know, Panadol or something like that. But he was saying it's just every second ad of these drug ads, you know. And he was listing all the different psych medications that get dished out there. And it was just astonishing, you know. And it really makes sense that they take them in, they get them started on them, and then the parents notice a change for the better or whatever for a little bit. They might be more focused, and then problems start to rise, and they seem like they're more into themselves, or the parents worried, and they go back to the psychiatrist, and they put them on heavier ones, and it just goes from there. And then it starts to mimic these mental illnesses that the psychiatrists and the doctors tell the parents that the kids have. But it's the drugs causing them, you know, and it's another attack on already suffering kids.
Your disease is caused by poisoning from the environment, and then the doctor gets a hold of you, and his only solution is to poison you more.
Yeah, the psychiatry industry is a scam in that way, you know. It's an absolute scam.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's no different than the regular doctor.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just the thing is either chop it or poison it. That's their only solution for anything, you know.
Yeah, I've known people who had to go on some of these medications from psychiatrists and said they were hearing voices in their heads and went into a dark place. That's interesting.
Yeah, no kidding.
Interesting. So interesting. And yeah. when you think they're specifically developing drugs to mimic these mental illnesses and then making up names for them and selling them, it's just unbelievable. And people hearing all these weird sounds and noises and things going on in their minds, you know, that's unbelievable. That's deep stuff, man. And they've been doing it for so long. And you know, the psychiatric industry or psychiatrists in general, not only do they get paid almost better than any other profession, it's a very prestigious and sort of profession for people. He's a psychiatrist. It's like, wow, la-di-da, you know, these guys are put up on the pedestal, but they're poisoning people and they've done it for a long time. It's an interesting subject to look at and go over and how far it goes back and what poisons they used to use and how the drugs have changed, but they're really targeting children now and normalizing it. It's a really sad thing to see, and it goes on and continues. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
It's, but I have personal experience. I've known some people who have been on those drugs, and they've had some bad experiences, man. Very, very bad.
Well,
whereas other people, some
these...
people seem balanced. If they have to have them, and that balances them, and they stay on it, you know. Some people, they have to give them stronger stuff because they're not coping at work or something like that, you know. But yeah, a lot of people can see they're not doing well, and they have to make the drug stronger for them.
Well, it's not like a temporary effect either. A lot of these drugs, they create permanent damage, you know.
Yeah, underneath, yeah.
You know, and like I think that's probably explains, you know, hypothetically, as always, Jim Carrey. You've heard of him, right? I mean, the comedian, right? You know that he's going into a lot of problems over the last several years.
Sure.
Actually, it was I think decades ago he started taking pills and things like that, and I think that they damaged him, you know.
Yeah.
Just my own guess, you know. But I've been following him pretty closely, and I always loved his work.
Yeah, sure.
Although what's interesting is he came up, he was actually put in business as a comedian with his early films. His agents that controlled him and helped him were actually pharmaceutical advertising people. And what's interesting is he's always looked like an ADHD kid that should be on Ritalin, you know? Mm. And that was at the height of the Ritalin drug epidemic, is when he came into vogue. Any child that saw a Jim Carrey movie would think that acting crazy and weird would be normal, right? And it's a good way to get yourself in trouble, have yourself sent to the school nurse, and then you're going to end up on a lifetime supply of Ritalin, you know?
Hmm.
You know, so that's my conspiracy theory about Jim Carrey, you know.
When he first came into the United States and was doing his
when he first became famous with his movies.
Yeah, but you can see earlier videos where he was a comedian and he's pretty nuts, man. It was pretty
full on. Well, about as out as you can get.
You would look at that, but we view it as comedy. But even viewing old Robin Williams shows sometimes on the Tonight Shows and that, he was out of his mind. I mean, you can see it as comedy, but you're like, wow, these guys are like hyperactive. You know, they just don't stop. You can't, the host can't get a word in. It's just nonstop. Just over the top stuff, you know. Interesting, concept there, Jim. Yeah.
But it is pharma related businessmen who got Jim Carrey happening, you know. And that's when John Rappaport was doing his articles on Ritalin, you know, and how the drug companies had actually got into the top leadership of the United States education system in order to plant the Ritalin protocol there as a way of handling kids that were going ADHD and all that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's a massive epidemic, wasn't it? The Ritalin in the U.S., in the schools with the kids, yeah. Is that still so prevalent today, still going on?
I wonder. Is it still...
Jeez.
Yeah, this is still happening.
It's almost like every second school kid had some Ritalin tabs in their bags, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to a friend of mine who had, he and his wife had had children, and this was like decades ago. And I said, man, having a kid nowadays is tough, man. I sure wouldn't want to have my kid on Ritalin. And so he immediately got this weird look in his face, and he bent over and started petting his child like, don't worry, don't listen to him. Mm. You know what it means? So obviously his child was on Ritalin.
This man's putting bad thoughts in your head. Don't listen
to
him.
Yeah, yeah. Ritalin's not that bad, you know. Don't worry, son, Christ. You know. And I was like, oh, me and my big mouth. I knew it was prevalent, but you can't even talk to anybody without probably talking to somebody who's on Ritalin, you know.
God, it's like giving all the hippies in the 60s the strong acid. It was like a Ritalin epidemic, an engineered one in American schools. So they had it all set up and prepared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, supposedly it started out with good acid, and then it ended up with bad acid at the end of the... A hippie phenomenon.
CIA acid, absolutely. Amazing. Those drugs are really interesting. Perhaps we can continue about these big pharma industry and their drugs like that, especially in looking at children.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people talk about. I know John's gone into it a lot, just phenomenal. Yeah, it was something that went under the radar for so many years and became the norm, you know, and you just didn't hear people sort of saying, why are all these kids on Ritalin? What is this, you know? It was seems to be associated. I would like to talk more about what the effects are going to be.
It looks like they're still using it. They're using dexedrine and Ritalin.
They've got
for
different
ADHD.
Ones though, right? They got So they're using those for the ADHD.
Yeah, they're using it. They're still using it. I checked it out.
Still
here.
Going. Jeez, man, that's an old drug, isn't it?
Yeah, they made a ton of money on that.
Yeah. So create
it's a stimulant.
Yeah.
It's a stimulant. That's wow, it's weird. It's funny you give a stimulant to somebody with ADHD, but I guess that's a way of pushing them over into fake normalcy. You know?
It's remarkable creating illnesses and creating these conditions like autism and ADHD with intent on purpose through other medical ways, and then coming up with drugs like Ritalin to treat those conditions that they caused. It's unbelievable, and then it continues from there.
The real tragedy, I think, is that the human spirit does not naturally rebel against the doctors who are telling them that they are dysfunctional and that they need a drug. You know, if a doctor says I'm dysfunctional and I need a drug, I'd say, you're crazy. I wouldn't say it. I'd be very diplomatic, very quiet, but I wouldn't go back to that doctor. You know, because I don't think it's good to make an enemy with a doctor because they're, you know, but it's good to avoid them if they're crazy.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
yeah. Oh, well, there's been a lot of reports where they're obviously getting benefits from pharmaceutical industry and reps that come in and see the doctors for certain drugs that they sell, and then you've got the psychiatric profession who are using drugs and the doctors sending them to the kids to there.
Yeah, we know it's insane. We know it's insane. You and I know it's insane. But tell me, why does the average person just not instinctively recognize the idiocy?
Yeah, I know they don't.
What's going on?
They
don't. Why do they agree with it? It seems that there's an instinct to want to believe in authority and to join the herd and whatever it wants. You know, if they could tell them to jump over a cliff, they would do it. If they told them that you're doing it for society, you're doing it to save the world, jump off this cliff, people would do it. And we know it's been proven that people will kill other people if anybody with a white coat, not even a college degree, but a white coat, tells them to do it. They will actually kill people.
You're hypnotized.
You know, that's been proven.
It's a hypnosis.
Well, no, it's not hypnotized. It's an instinct. It's an instinct that people has to do with their desire to follow the herd and follow the authorities and the alpha whatever in the herd. That's just a natural instinct. People want to be cooperative. So when somebody with a so-called authority tells them to kill somebody, they'll go ahead and do it. They may hesitate a little, but they'll go ahead and do it. That's what these studies have shown that, you know.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot. You know, people will question almost anything, but when it comes to the doctor telling them this or that, they will drop everything and do it without even a thought. Yeah,
they'll damage their own kid.
They do.
It's like in the Bible where God asks Abraham whatever to kill his child, and he goes, well, okay, and then the God says, okay, I'm just kidding. I just want to test your obedience factor there. You know, they do the same thing. Doctors do the same thing with parents. They have them killing their, you know, feeding them drugs and things that are bad for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And the parents are not questioning. They're going, okay, the doctor said so. What I'm just saying is herd instinct, like an automatic thing. You can't fight it. Just it's part of being human. So. Can you think of a better answer? Why do people do that?
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's part of the culture as well, and movies and thing. You always see, growing up, women always wanted to marry a doctor, and if there was a doctor around or a doctor in the family, it was Dr. Roberts, right. Dr. Phil, Dr. this, Dr. that. It was very prestigious.
Dr. Kildare.
Yeah, but it's always Kildare, they've always been put up on that pedestal, and that goes way back in history as well. It goes way back, you know. You can go back to any era, you know.
Well,
you know, and they were it was like that, you know.
Yeah, George Bernard Shaw, he said that every woman loves a fascist, you know. Yeah. And maybe it's true. A lot of guys love fascists too, right? But supposedly a woman loves a fascist more than a man, because they say that when a woman walks out of a doctor's office, the chance is twice as much that she will be carrying drugs. That's a known fact.
It's amazing. As I've said to you before, I think one of the most popular shows in the world, and one of the most popular TV shows in Australia, is The Good Doctor. It's an American TV show about an autistic doctor. You've seen that show. It's an American medical drama TV series. It started in 2013. It's won multiple awards, I think, and he's the good doctor, and he's like this young kid who's autistic and does all these incredible surgeries and everything, and people love it. They love the autistic doctor, you know?
Wow.
Amazing. And it was like the brainwashing, Jim, you know, growing up with the shows, you know, those shows like Bewitched. Maybe not Bewitched. I think it was I Dream of Jeannie, where the father was in the military and they had all the... you know, all the military propaganda and shows and TV shows, you know, to promote the U.S. Army and stuff like that. People grow up and they just get used to it, you know, and they watch Top Gun and Tom Cruise and they just, maybe it's the culture and movies and TV, I'm mentioning as well, here. Why people put them up like that pedestal, the doctors.
I have a little review. He's the most popular surgeon on TV.
He is.
He has near perfect recall, photographic memory, savant-like diagnostic abilities. He's the poster boy of Hollywood autism.
That's right. They love it, mate. They love it. It's on TV here. They can't get enough.
Yeah.
It's the new season started, and they all sit down every night with their cushions and with their hot cocoa, and they love it. They love the good doctor.
Mate. How much autism do I need to make my child like that doctor?
Get superhuman... superhuman abilities, man. You see through walls. That's
the wonder of ultrasound. It creates wonderful personalities.
It creates superheroes who can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're saying, you know. And
they'll make you want to submit your child to an operation to chop his balls off.
Yeah, with these kinds of shows, they're not just normalizing autism. They're making it a fantastic thing. Through these people, that people almost want it because it's like this special thing that you can have, and you can get all these amazing abilities that secretly get handed to you when you become autistic.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And that's what the shows are doing. That's the deeper meaning of these shows that no one will talk about. But this show's a psyop. It's a psychological operation. It's social engineering to the highest order in regards to autism, because this show came out when autism spiking so much, and it's become... funnily enough, so popular in Australia with an autism tidal wave surrounding every aspect of our lives. And now we've got this guy and the TV executives and the propaganda. So very cunning and incredible maneuver there. And TV's so powerful in that regard, isn't it? So fascinating. We had a show before that called House with the Dr. House guy. There's been a lot. There's the good doctor.
Dr. House.
He was very, right. There was Grey's Anatomy. You know, like those kind of, then there was the hospital dramas that you grow up with. I remember on TV when I was a kid, there was all those hospital boring daytime series dramas. It's part of people's lives in reality and TV as well. It's just indoctrinating.
And Dr. Mendelsohn, Robert S. Mendelsohn, he has a thing called The Devil's Priest, a chapter on doctors. And he says that doctors never failed to be the most stupid people in the world, arrogant, stupid, and dangerous. But then when you watch a show like House, the guy's like witty, intelligent, brilliant, you know. And even when they're autistic, they're still great, you know.
That's right.
The opposite of Robert S. Mendelsohn's conception of a doctor, you know.
That's right. It's all on show. We've done shows talking about the news anchormen, you know. We have it here where if these TV networks for the nightly news at 6 get a good anchorman with the right tone Just not old enough and not young enough, you know, just that nice age, maybe 40s or mid 40s or so. He can be on there for years and years and years every night at six because the people establish that trust in him. He delivers the news, but the news isn't really important. That's going in into your mind, you know, but what's important is that anchor man to hook you in every night. And we talked about that on many podcasts about the color of the sets, the moody blues and the way the sets are designed and everything, and the way they conduct themselves, their hand movements, their head movements. It's like hypnotizing the public and indoctrinating them into accepting everything that they say. So a lot of it does come through the TV and through the magazines and everything, of course. But that's a powerful tool that they use. It's hypnotizing people almost every night. Huh. So, you know, these people, they sit down and they watch dozens of these seasons of series. You know, The Good Doctor, House, they go on for many seasons, year after year, and it establishes trust in the viewer, and they become to love these characters. Then the mums with their autistic children down at the schools, and they're talking about The Good Doctor and how he's a genius and how autism really isn't that bad at all, maybe, because he's on TV. So it's a great tool for them to use.
And they have their latest ultrasound photo of their baby in their pregnant belly that they can show on their smartphone.
That's right. Yeah, they actually got the smartphone resting on their belly.
Yeah. Hey, I think I better head
Let's
out.
Let's skedaddle, Jim. Otherwise, we'll talk all night.
It's 1 a.m. here, you know.
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, we're just under the hour, but that's okay. We did all right. Got a lot of good info out tonight. And will you be in New York next week, or what are you talking about? Another couple of weeks, so you probably
probably, yeah.
I should be I should be around. I'm away next Saturday. I should be back by Sunday, but I'll hook in and see if you're around.
We'll see what happens.
No worries, man.
Aim for next weekend.
All right. Take care. Good to chat with you. A lot covered, and we'll speak again soon.
Thanks a lot, Adam.